The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
This episode of Beyond is brought to you by forhims.com, F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 That's okay. The one. That's
yeah,
the name of the show.
That's the show.
Did it. Beyond.
Way to go.
What's up, everyone? My name is Jonathan Dormish. This is episode 559 of Beyond. I am joined this week by Brian Altano.
Thanks for having me.
Max Scoville.
Yeehaw.
And John Thaddeus Ryan.
Hi. I'm sorry that I messed up your intro, guys.
Don't worry about it. Is your middle name Thaddeus?
No, it's not. It's Patrick, which is almost worse because that means I'm super duper Irish.
Why don't we split the difference and call you Patius?
I like that.
I mean, I'll myself tomorrow, but sure, yeah.
All right.
That's a wonderful way to start the show. Right. Before we actually start the show, a quick reminder, Beyond is live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific at beyond.ign.com. It is there for a full 24 hours before it is live anywhere else we're used to seeing it.
Exclusive. World premiere.
Beyond.ign.com. Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific. Now on to the actual show.
Now speaking yourself, Spider-Man loves to do that.
Good save.
On webs.
What the fuck is wrong with you guys?
Safely on the web.
You can't do that.
No, we need to do transitions.
This is not a good.
All right.
Anyway, so yeah, Spider-Man, it's out. If you listened to our spoiler cast last week with the game's creative director, Brian Intihar, thank you so much for listening to that. It was a really fun show. We're not going to try to spoil too much of the show, of the game. Obviously, we did that last week. We do want to dive in, though. There is something within the game that people have discovered, specifically on the pause menu. There's sort of like a really nice Twitter feed. One thing I want to say about the Twitter feed is everyone's really polite and kind on that feed, which is lovely and not how Twitter is at all these days.
Someday video games will be more realistic.
Yeah, one day.
Yeah, the in-game social media feed, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I was afraid to read that because I figured it would just be another flood of negativity.
Yeah,
right?
Surprisingly, it's really nice and positive. And one of the things people found in there is and I'm going to read the exact text from it, but there is a post on there from IG Ted Price. Ted Price, of course, one of the founders of Insomniac Games, still at the studio to this day, posts on that feed under that handle in real life. In the feed, it says, "Hey, did you hear Insomniac Games is announcing a new game next week?"
What?
That's all it says in there. So obviously, the game debuted on Friday, September 7th. So we're already more than a week after the game debuted.
What the hell, Ted?
Yeah, so the game should have been announced. Obviously, Spider-Man 2 was supposed to be confirmed. Something just messed up. No, so I wanted to ask you guys what you thought about this tease within the game itself. If it's just a joke, if it's something real. We've reached out and asked for comment. We haven't gotten any confirmation of...
Is this news for the characters in the game? Like, are they in, like, a Truman Show cycle?
That's the thing.
Because that's really scary.
Insomniac Games exists within the world of Spider-Man.
But they develop for different consoles. We did a thing on Up at Noon about this, because there is a game store in Spider-Man, and you can look into it through the window like a creepy peeper. And they have these weird consoles that aren't quite PlayStations and aren't quite Xboxes.
Yeah, like some of them look like PlayStation.
They're Playboxes. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. There's like a Dreamcast.
It has a circular logo in the front, but it's like a flat front. They look like white. Yeah.
You'd think that a Sony published game could get the rights to use like a proper PlayStation controller.
Yeah. Well, we talked about the Vita thing with Brian when he was here
last
week.
Just a portable game system.
Which is sort of like, yeah, I guess they wanted like a nod to it, so I don't really know how deep that goes. But yeah, this is interesting news. My theory with Insomniac Games, it's not really a big shot in the dark here, but they will become a Spider-Man studio for the next 7 years, and that's okay. I don't think there's really any going backwards for them. Not to say that their other games are backwards, but this is, we'll see when the MPD comes in. This will be one of the best-selling games of the year.
Oh yeah,
you know, hands down. I think that I have a feeling this game might outsell God of War in 2018, or probably in its first year.
Yeah.
I think for the fact that it casts a wider net in terms of mass market appeal, in terms of the age rating on it, like children can buy into it.
Let's look at let's pretend your mom at the video game store and you see these two games here, and one says Spider-Man, and you think like, oh, he's that colorful character who's been around for 65 years, and they make underpants of him. And then there's God of War, which is like, there's the Lord's name, and then there's War. I don't like the only word I like in this title is of.
One of them is effectively getting, not necessarily, but basically a giant theatrical movie promotional tie-in in December with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And then there's the fact that there was Homecoming less than a year ago. So, like, there's a lot going on there. There's Spider-Man. We're probably going to read the story on Up at Noon, but Spider-Man comics, they're selling like 50,000 comics a month just on eBay. 12,000 Spider-Man action figures a month. Like, it's, people are absolutely crazy for this character right now.
It's a great year for Spider-Man. Like, in addition to, we got Infinity War. We got Spider-Man the game. We're getting into the Spider-Verse. And then there's also Venom on top of that. Like, I can't think of an instance where a character has done that much. I mean, it feels like...
Well, think
this
about...
the ubiquity of a single...
Think
game.
About
Batman
two...
Batman maybe about half a decade ago.
Yeah. But even then, like, it was very hard to line up the sort of Nolan trilogy with a video game.
Right.
Like, the closest we got was... There was an iPhone game by Gameloft that directly tied into Dark Knight.
I think there was a console Batman Begins
game.
Yes.
Terrible.
Was it really?
So I hear.
I've never played it.
That's the thing. It's like, I apparently hear that it was not great.
Right. But then
we got Arkham Asylum, like, 2 years later.
Well, think about... Like, the closest we've come to this from the studio specifically is a couple years ago, there was a Ratchet & Clank game and a Ratchet & Clank movie.
Yep.
And we all remember how that synergy came together, or didn't. Well, the game was really cool, but the movie did not really move the needle.
I did want to ask, you were saying how you think they're going to be a Spider-Man studio going forward, and I certainly think that will be their main thrust for the next decade. But they clearly have a big investment in producing VR games. They did have a resurgence with Ratchet & Clank. Like, that was a really well-beloved sort of rebranding of that game, that franchise, even though the movie didn't do so well. The game was a really great thing. So do you think they're just going to ignore all of that? Are they going to try to maybe dip into their other interests from time to time, or is this...
So I think the way I'll put it is, if Spider-Man was a decent game that will sell tens of millions of units, I would be like, okay, well, these guys are kind of shackled to this thing for a while. Yeah. Maybe they're not crazy about it. But this is an incredibly loved game.
I feel like this is what Sony's going to say. Like, we want you guys working. I don't think that Ratchet & Clank is going to go the way of the Dodo. Like, they could definitely put the license someplace else for a little while.
Yep.
But yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think that we'll probably be seeing Spider-Man 2 before anything else.
They also I don't want to spoil anything. They left a lot of opportunities open to return to that universe in some way, to return to characters. They've threaded story plots through different venues than we've seen in the comics before too, which I think, just as like somebody who's been a fan of that stuff for a long time, I'm sort of like, oh, I selfishly want a sequel because I want to see how you handle this character and this character. If you look at the way they handle the characters in this game in such a unique and fresh way, that makes me want to go into that more. There's also, I mean, I'm not saying they'll do this, but there's an opportunity to even do a prequel and be like, hey, here's where the story began. Here's that origin story for the umpteenth time.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, I don't think anyone will have beef with this, because this is a great game that people love and they want to get back into it. I think it will be missing the novelty that is that, like, this is what it feels like to swing around this
city. What if they totally threw us for a loop and we got like a Daredevil game? Because they've already built New York. There's a bunch of like nods to other Marvel characters in there.
From Insomniac, you mean?
Yeah. Like, what if
they
really
just become a Defenders franchise instead?
Yeah. I don't know if I want the Defenders, like the Netflix version, but...
But like all of the New York Marvel heroes.
Right.
I don't know if there was supposed to be a Daredevil game for a second. I don't know if it ever actually came out. I remember reading about it in high school. And the whole thing was, it basically had an early version of like detective mode. And it was, I remember, like, I probably was looking at like screenshots on IGN when I was in like the high school library. This was before the god awful Ben Affleck movie. And it was going to be like, oh yeah, you can see through walls and you can see people's heartbeats. And it's like more about... like the different sensory advantages that Matt Murdock would have than...
I feel like that would be a fantastic PSVR game, like sort of locking into kind of detective style.
Yeah.
like, but with some combat, like where things are mostly dark, but you can, you know, hit a button and sort of like pulse scan the room based on sound.
Yeah, that could be super cool for just sort of like
a short experience.
A short experience, but also like, you know, an empathetic experience to a point where it's like, you know, yes, it's Daredevil, yes, it's a superhero game, but it's also like, oh, this is the closest facsimile I can have to this experience.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did want to, just going off that a bit, Max, obviously I think this tease for, hey, we're announcing a game next week, I think it's more of a joke or just like the nature of the cycle of needing to announce games as soon as you have like a big success. But what do you guys want to see from Insomniac's next game? Do you want it to be Spider-Man 2? Do you want to see them take on a new hero? Like, the reality of it is they will be making a Spider-Man 2, I think. But for me personally, I would love to see, going off a little bit, like what you were saying with a prequel, I would love if they were doing sort of almost like comic book style episodic releases where every year we get like in between big releases, we get maybe a like 3 or 4 hour contained experience that is a different entry in the Spider-Man.
Sure. Like so, do the origin story stuff, do Maximum Carnage, like just throw, just get it.
Oh, what if it was like their take on famous comic lines?
Yeah.
That'd be rad.
Or do like a 5 hour, 2099. That
that
I mean, I think you'd have to overhaul one. You'd have to overhaul the whole city for that.
Yeah, but. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's cool that they have like I'm seeing this right now with like with the Yakuza games, not to tie everything to that, but they've built this wonderfully detailed version of like Kabukicho, and they're like, here's our city, and they keep kind of putting new stories in that environment without actually changing the map a whole lot. And I feel like with Insomniac, like the bulk of making that game is getting the traversal down and giving it a city to do that in, you know, and like what the coat of paint on top of the city looks like could change. Like they could be like, all right, so this is still Spider-Man's New York City, sort of, but like it's wintertime and you're Daredevil, you know, like, and they've already built like the skeleton for it and they've got like a lot of the mechanics there.
Right.
It would be really cool if we got something like a Lost Legacy, you know, like it's a smaller, you know, maybe it's not, you know, it's not Spider-Man 2, but it's like, maybe it's Spider-Man, not Shattered Dimensions. I don't know, some you know, some colon, here's the other thing, like here's the little, you know, little adventure.
It's weird to make a short open world game.
Yeah,
you know, you don't see that a lot because everyone's always like, I want to spend 70 hours here, and it's like, well, yeah, you can do that right now, but like, how do you pile more stuff on top of that? I guess we'll find out with the DLC.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing that shift into games as a service, and we're kind of getting that with the DLC.
Yeah,
I don't know. I definitely don't want to see like a, you know, a online component or anything, but it would be nice to have like little adventures here and there.
Yeah.
Maybe they're like, hey, here's some DLC for you. It's Brooklyn.
I mean, I think
it's
kind other of like boroughs.
What we have seen a lot of the discussion be around Spider-Man, where it's like, you know, obviously they don't want to just copy what, you know, Rocksteady did with Batman, but like there's a lot of great cues they could take from that, where it's like you have other characters from the mythos interactable in different ways. So it's like, you know, you have people, there are a couple of side missions where like other characters show up and there's some challenges, which are great, but like those are also just like all over the map. So it's like, if it's stuff where you have to really kind of get lost in New York and wander around to find stuff, like that's the sweet spot, like batting that stuff in.
I would love to see more sort of video game versions of Marvel characters in there. Like, I know that it's a sticky thing right now because Disney has the rights to a bulk of Marvel stuff, all the Avengers, MCU stuff, and then Fox has X-Men and whatever is incorporated with that, and then Spider-Man is Sony. And I know that's all in the movie department, and then it gets a little bit more complicated when you get into video game territory. But I would love to see, like...
Not that much more complicated. If you look at, like, Marvel versus Capcom, that's pretty cut and dry of who they're allowed to play with.
No, exactly. But then you see like random mobile games where they'll be like, oh, here's Wolverine. Like, I'd be pretty happy if like maybe a character from another sort of thing shows up in there. Because like that's like the ongoing series, or not ongoing series, but the kind of classic Marvel series, Marvel team-ups, was Spider-Man and... It was Spider-Man and somebody else. Like that's it was not even... It wasn't Spider-Man team-ups. It was Marvel team-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Like, give me something like that. I mean, I don't know. Throw in the Fantastic Four. Like,
A huge nod to his origins. Yeah,
I would love that.
It's really curious to me because I guess like now that they have done this with the first game, there are so many references to other characters, and whether it is like buildings related to another character or the bars that they go to, like those are in the game. And so to completely ignore them going forward would, I think, shrink the universe that they've created there after already opening those doors. I am curious, though, on that note, whether they go into Spider-Man 2 next or whether they try something else out first, what would you all want to see, without us trying to be too spoilery about it, what would you like to see from a Spider-Man sequel?
Honestly, less. Not necessarily less in terms of things to do, but just less in the sense of them showing it to me. Because, I mean, you know, once you do all the towers, like, literally everything is on your map. And like I was saying, there's no sense of, you know, there's a great sense of exploration and traversal is awesome, but, like, I want them to guide me through the city less.
Right. Like I said with the Maximum Carnage stuff, I don't, and we'll see, but historically the symbiote stuff hasn't really worked with films that well. Like, it just comes off as either, like a little too aggressive or it's just hokey. But I think with a video game, especially with one like with the palette that Spider-Man has, like you have the freedom to make something that's fun and crazy and colorful. And like Carnage, I think, is a goofy cartoon character. Like, it looks like a child's drawing of an angry red blob, basically. Yeah. And so I'd love to see that animated, like, crawling up the side of a giant building, infecting other people throughout the city and turning them on you. Just the way you could weaponize that. Playing as one of those characters and pulling up a weapon wheel where you can basically pull up, like, turn your arm into an axe or a gun or anything like that. Like, I think there's
literally just be prototype.
Yeah, basically.
I love the first prototype.
But in the hands of a competent, you know, like a competent team with a vision. I think, like, prototype had a lot of good things going for it. But I think that, like, not really having any connection to any sort of history as comic book fans. Like, they had to create their own universe there because they didn't have a license to work with.
Which is always tough.
It's very tough. Yeah, it's hard to find a connection there. Whereas I think people love the Carnage.
I'm with JR. I'd like to see less of things, especially going into a reveal. I thought that they did a pretty good job of keeping stuff kind of buttoned up, but there's a thing we see, and it's also, you know, it's kind of a bittersweet part of doing this for a living, is that we keep track of every sort of info dump that we get prior to a game's release. And even when we get the game early, there's still stuff that's like, well, if I hadn't seen that coming, that would have been a pretty cool surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, for the most part, there's like a ton of stuff that doesn't get spoiled ahead of time with Spider-Man, but there's also, you know, they're like, hey, here's screenshots, here's characters who are here, here's stuff that we know is coming, and you kind of expect it. And it's, I don't know, I think that I have this thing, this is, the more I think about it, the more I love the idea of it. I think with movies, they shouldn't be allowed to make trailers that pull from anything but the first third of the movie, the first act. That should be like the rule is like, anything after that, you're spoiling it, just get out of there. I don't know what the version of that for games would be.
Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah, don't show anything from the second half of the game.
The Marvel Cinematic Universe is so interesting because they have to, in a way, like, humanize ridiculous characters and make them feel like they are tangibly concocted with using real parts and stuff like that. And I think, like, the way they handled some of the villains in this game had sort of like one foot in that theory, and then another foot in just like cartoon video game nonsense, which I love. And so to me, that opens up so many doors to bring in that weird cavalry of just nightmare idiots that Spider-Man fights. Like, he just fights some of the stupidest characters, and I love them all in the best ways. And bringing them in and introducing them in that way where you're like, okay, that feels sort of like real, but it also feels like a cartoon. I think there's so much room for him to fight villains here that we haven't, that you'd have a tougher time introducing in film. If you look at like Michael Keaton's Vulture character, like that felt like there was a real sort of story behind that. It veered into ridiculousness, but even the way they did the kind of like turtleneck, they were like, oh, it's part of the suit, or, you know, like he's a ex, like he worked on this at this company that weaponized like birds or whatever.
He just happened to have a feather bomber jacket. A sheepskin one.
And in the video game, I think they got a little bit hokier with it, but in a great way.
Yeah.
I think they embraced that sort of like Ditko style a little more, and I think there's a way to do that with tons more villains, so I hope that's what it really leans.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, more. If we're looking, whether it was Spider-Man 2 or even just like DLC for this one, like, I would love to just sort of see more of that with sort of just the open world in general, like, less about creating this like long form narrative and more it's just like, nah, Rhino broke out of prison again, go come on.
So that was one of the things I was hoping we'd get more of in this game.
Yeah,
like, in this game there's a lot of like someone stole a car or like there's five thugs on the street, but it was very rare to sort of be like, this like prominent Spider-Man villain is just in Times Square wreaking havoc.
Well, there was the chameleon's on the loose, and he could be anyone.
Yeah.
He'll beat up every NPC.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I wanted more stuff like that.
Yeah, well, it's like someone missed the party sequence, like, not to throw too many spoilers, there's a guy in a Mysterion costume.
Mysterio.
I'm sorry, Mysterio.
Get it mixed up with South Park the game.
Oh, God, that was what that was from, wasn't it? Oh, I'm so sorry.
Mysterion is the costume
I feel bad about
you buy
myself
at Halloween
now.
Headquarters.
Mysterio's exactly. Like, Mysterio is quietly become, like, one of my favorite, like, Marvel characters just because he's completely ludicrous.
Yep.
And they have done some smart stuff with him, and there are rumors that Jake Gyllenhaal's playing him in the next Spider-Man movie.
I'd be into it.
And the fact that they made just kind of a gag out of him in the new game.
But I mean, that's the thing though. It's like when you go into that hall of mirrors with him in there, like, you know it's just a goof, but at the same time, you're like, oh, fudge, I would really love a bigger version of this.
Yeah, I think I'm excited to see what they do with the DLC because I think it's a good chance for them to experiment with that. Yeah. And I really hope they do keep sort of a lid on what they're actually doing with the DLC. I don't want to see too much.
I'm going to be so excited if we don't know. Like, we know the first one is the heist, and that's Black Cat. And then we know that there's like
Turf Wars.
Yeah. And then there's something else.
And I forget. Silver Lining.
I really hope. I'm guessing that Silver Lining is going to be Silver Sable.
You would assume.
I wish it was Silver Surfer.
Silver Surfer. Yeah, he just shows up and he's like, Galactus is coming to eat the buildings. He's a large purple man and he's very hungry.
He's like, no one has used me well in a video game or a movie in like 15 years or ever, so please.
It's ever. Please help me.
Please help me. Do something with me. I'm great.
You'll never catch me. I'm the Silver Surfer. You gotta chase him down.
It's just a drone chase. But with
It's the pigeons again.
Yeah, it's just the pigeons, but it's a giant man in silver. I'm super excited to see. I'd like also that we have this DLC coming up so soon that it'll give us a good chance to revisit this world and everything and see what their aspirations are for the rest of it.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's some time if you've already beaten the game. We have. I'm curious what you think would be a good game to return to while people are waiting for more Spider-Man or just more things to play in general. Like, what would you recommend to people to play in the vein of Spider-Man if they're looking for something else and they're not just web-swinging around? From the Facebook Beyond group, Brennan Boya said, I finished Spider-Man and am still just playing Spider-Man. I can't stop. Got gold on all of a certain type of challenge. I won't say in case people don't want to be spoiled. Platinum trophy. Now trying to get every possible crime token and the secret photo. So obviously there's a lot around this game to do, but if people have already platinumed it and are obsessive like some of us, what would you recommend people go on to?
Infamous Second Son's my go-to for sure, because that's when it launched with the PS4, which feels like 100 years ago at this point. And if you're late to the party on the PlayStation 4 in general, which I know a lot of people, you know, they waited for God of War, they waited for Spider-Man, they got in there, and they're really enjoying it. It feels like a weird one. Maybe you forgot about it. Maybe you skipped over it. Yeah. Maybe you just need to replay it. Even the DLC is great.
Yeah. I would honestly say if you're like not sold on the full game of Infamous Second Son, like try Last Light, because I feel like the traversal in that one is even better.
Yeah, this was actually one of my, you know, outside of the Arkham games, this is one of my favorite comic book games for a very long time, pretty much until Spider-Man. It's got some of the most kind of gorgeous looking graphics and particle effects. Once it really gets going, it's just so much fun to watch and play. Traversal is a blast, like running up the side of buildings, shooting up into the sky, and like power bombing down. Yep. Like, there's a lot of really cool, just like laser light show stuff.
There was a pretty big reason that everyone expected Sucker Punch to be making a Spider-Man game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it was like Insomniac. We're like, oh, well, all right then.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this game still looks fantastic. And I cannot believe that was a launch title.
I know. It's crazy. I don't know how. It's probably pretty cheap now. I assume you can get it.
I bet it's almost free at this point. If not actually free with PS Plus.
Yep.
I would give it to, I know it had a bit of a rocky time on consoles at first, but I think I would give it to, if you want to keep that sense of like open world fun and traversal, I'd give it to Just Cause 3.
Mm.
Especially if you get all the DLCs, because once you power up all of your equipment and like, because you can get a wingsuit in that, but then you can get a wingsuit with like jet thrusters, and you can get the grappling hook and extend that even longer than normal. Like, you're basically Iron Man.
We're getting a new Just Cause game in like a month.
Like a month
in December.
In December, which is crazy to me, but I'm also super excited for it. I played a little bit of it, and it was super funny.
I know 3 was kind of spotty when it launched on PlayStation.
So console was tough, because that game had a lot of ambition for the hardware at launch, but they've optimized it since. If you've got a PS4, especially if you've got a PS4 Pro, I'm pretty sure it's fairly cheap. Like, go and do yourself a favor and give it a shot.
That's a wonderful game. What's really frustrating, though, is that you have to do a bunch of sort of challenges to unlock stuff, and failing the challenges has like a prohibitively annoying load time.
Yeah.
To the point, I don't know if it's better on a pro, but like that was one thing that just really, really bugged me.
Yeah. I mean, those things, I replayed it once they were like, oh, hey, Just Cause 4 is coming. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'm immediately going to replay Just Cause 3.
And you can't shoot webs in that game, but you can tether ropes.
You sort of do have it, as well.
Kind
of
yes. Web.
Yeah.
Like, you've got a web, but it's also a parachute.
Yeah. You can basically hook up like you basically pivot bridges to ropes and blow stuff up and swing on them.
Yeah. It's a wonderful physics playground. And, you know, again, super, super fun, because, like, you can legitimately fly over that entire world once you get comfortable with it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's super good.
In the open world superhero department, Saints Row 4 is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. That was a last gen game. That was built on the guts of Saints Row the Third, so it's the same city. And it's like, it felt DLC-ish, like at that when it first came out. But I think they've you know HD'd it up a little bit and made it nicer for PS4. But that's just fun to move around in. I could almost go back to that one. And of course, you can make your own character. You probably play as Spider-Man if you want.
You 100% can.
on the subject of Insomniac Games, obviously the thing that apparently led them to making Spider-Man was Sunset Overdrive, which is, of course, an Xbox One exclusive, unfortunately.
Forbidden Word.
Yeah, but that's like that is a gorgeous, super fun game to play, just moving around that.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good time.
The ambitions of that game and being able to know that, like, pretty much wherever you go, you will find something to hop off of or grind on. Like, it's so smart about the world they created, and that was something they had to do from scratch. Yeah. They didn't have the basis of New York or Spider-Man's history.
Right. And, like, you can see it from the art design here and, like, the way that they let you customize your character. Like, it's just goofy fun.
Yep. Yeah.
It really is one of the closest things that we saw to a superhero game during this cycle of releases.
It's also very similar to Spider-Man in that, like, 7-10 hours in, you're better at it, your character moves quicker, you have more sort of like speed and velocity in the way you kind of like whip around this world. Like, it is, I hate being one of those guys that it's like, oh, it gets better the more you play, but this game really does. So does Spider-Man.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, for me, Spider-Man opened up so much more as the combat evolved and you had more gadgets and you had more skills. Yeah, and for something
dash.
I still have not upgraded any of my gadgets. I feel so bad.
Oh, really?
Oh, I have like the same three combos that I use and that's it.
What's wrong with you?
I'm a monster.
Insomniac game.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Speaking of gadgets and Insomniac, Ratchet & Clank, the new one. I wasn't really big into Ratchet & Clank when I was younger. That kind of came out when I was just, I don't know, I was playing Metal Gear Solid 2 or whatever. But I played this one and I loved it. It very quickly dawned on me that I was basically playing a Rocket Raccoon game.
Yeah.
And that made me just want to see Insomniac make a Marvel game. And then lo and behold, they did. So this game is just... I think it's easy to kind of look at it from a distance and be like, oh, it looks like a video game. And then you look at it closely and you're like, holy crap, look at how gorgeous all of the detail is.
Yeah. And when you like really drill down to like how impressive the suite of mechanics are when you like get all of the stuff upgraded.
It plays so well.
The weapons are so ridiculous and over the top too. Yeah.
There's a, you can make all your enemies dance, which is an unfortunate omission in Spider-Man. But yeah, you just...
so
you
far.
He's got
so
an electric far. Guitar that hurts people.
True.
Right?
Yeah, it's close. But yeah, for me, Ratchet & Clank, I love the series since it was like back on the PS2 days, I guess. And I think what this remake does so well is it captures Brian when he was on the show, and just in general talking about Spider-Man, they always say like they wanted it to feel like an Insomniac game still. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're ever like, well, what's an Insomniac game, this is sort of the epitome of it. It's funny, it's clever, it has heart, it has a lot of fun weaponry to deal with. The level design is really smart, and I think you see what that DNA is that they talk about so much in Ratchet and Clank.
Nice.
So I definitely recommend that one as well. We're going to take a very quick break, but we'll be right back with plenty more in the world of PlayStation.
We interrupt this program to bring you a brief message from Hims, a new wellness brand for men. Here's a not-so-fun fact. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35, and by the time you start to notice hair loss, it's usually too late. It's generally easier to keep the hair that you have than to replace the hair that you've lost, so why not do something about it? 4hims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness, and other stuff like that that might be embarrassing to deal with in person. Luckily, with Hims, there's no waiting rooms, no awkward in-person doctor's visits, and you can save plenty of time by just going to a website. Hims connects you with real doctors and gives you medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss and other possibly embarrassing problems. And this isn't snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements either. These are well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. If this sounds like it would help you out, order now. Our listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details, but this would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to the doctor or to a pharmacy. So just go to forhims.com/beyond. That's forhims.com/beyond. Once again, that's forhims.com/beyond. Thanks for listening, and now back to the show.
And we're back. Whoa, thank God we had that break. That was
nice. That's good.
Really needed it. Yeah. I can't speak anymore. Moving on to some big stuff happening in the world of PlayStation. The 6.0 update for the PS4 is live. You would think it would be big, but people were expecting this update. There were people using it in beta, things going on behind the scenes that we didn't know about. Everyone was expecting a lot of big changes. Before it even went out, they put the PSN store change on, where you could actually search and Google things normally, pretty much on the store. 6.0 update came out. doesn't do anything according to there the it is, update an old info. Story. Yeah, all the patch notes say is the system software update improves system performance.
So I don't know about you guys. I'm incredibly excited about this huge development. Can we see that screenshot again? Can we pull that up? That really
let's do a play by play.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I think they're really showing off.
It's got the blue.
Yeah.
The different blues.
So the weird thing is like
slightly
they,
bluer.
They, so yeah, what happened here?
Wow, wowzers.
So Sony patched their store a couple weeks ago so that their, you know, search isn't on Abacus anymore or whatever. And I think that would have been a nice one to just roll into this, but it happened, you know, before the
there
party.
There it is again. There look it is again. Wow. Yeah.
Weird thing, I'm also on Nintendo Voice Chat, which is our weekly Nintendo show here at IGN, and the Switch today, as the day we're recording this, is also hitting 6.0. And it's been out for like a fourth as many years. And also no one's going knows what's going on with that either. And I think iOS is about to hit 12. None of this means anything.
Brian, if we could just... Barrett, could you roll back one more time if you're watching the video show? Can we see the update one more time if you want? Let's just take one more.
Do a quick breakdown here. Yeah, it says system software update, PlayStation 4 system software update, in case you don't know what system you're using. And then it says about PlayStation 4 system software update, version 6.0. And they say the main features in version 6.0 update, and there's a bullet point here, just one, the system software update improves system performance.
Fascinating.
Really, I'm sorry to keep just going back to that, but it's just...
It's a lot to parse.
It's really just staggering. The grandeur of this update.
Mm-hmm.
They put in a lot of work over there at the PlayStation factory, putting all the updates in there. I'm glad that they've let us know what's going on behind the scenes.
It's become such a weird part of our lives as gamers to sort of be like, hey, the new 5.8 is here.
Did you get it? Did you get it?
6.3. What did they add?
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh, system stability is better now. And you're like, well, that's good, right? I'm like, yeah, but is that a thing we should be excited for?
I mean, kind of. Like,
because like one out of every three of them is just like, oh, we've added folders, right, or like we've overhauled like the search or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's just like, it's faster.
Yeah.
Like, well,
I'm always glad if there's less of a risk of something I'm playing crashing.
Yes. Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I feel like that's more like a 5.85.
So, and they do a lot of granular updates, so you wouldn't be surprised if that was just part of one of those.
Right.
What makes this more interesting is obviously a lot of fans were hoping, I think, for name changes. That is the big thing. Everyone still wants until the end of time. But what's interesting about this, when this update happened, people were sort of upset about it. I'm getting the exact name of the person. So Luke Mears. There we go. Luke Mears, a member of Sony's online safety team, was asked about this on Twitter, and he basically said, you'll see when people are like, hey, what's going on with this update? And then the update happened, and people were like, but nothing happened. Oh. And then he just posted a GIF of someone zipping their mouth shut and throwing away the key. So
go find that key, dude.
What's behind the key?
No, we talk a lot of sass here, but I'm really hope that there's a special surprise in store at the old Tokyo Game Show.
Yeah. I'm sure there will be. Like,
that'd be so cool if they just came out and they were like, I don't even know what I would want, really.
Hey, Death Stranding is out tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
System update 6.0.
How about we go back 3.0 and then they just make Bloodborne 2? I'll do that.
There you go.
Here's that trade today.
I don't care. We would never see you again.
Go back to the Abacus search. I just want Bloodborne 2.
Do you guys have that thing at all, that weird glitch where if you're going into like your folder of like streaming apps where all the icons are huge for no reason?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
Or also
that I don't. I haven't seen that. I would like to see them go back to the old one where I don't have to go to a separate screen to open
Netflix. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Do you ever see the thing where they advertise stuff to you that you have already? Like they're
all the time.
Like they're like, you go to the streaming, you go to like the video app section or whatever, and they're like, hey, you should check out Netflix and HBO Go. And I'm like, my dude, they are sitting right underneath this advertisement.
Yep.
You should look down and see them. Also, like my biggest thing is like when you go into your library to download a game, there's a 1 in 3 chance that it just like hangs for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. Or it's just not there sometimes.
Yeah. Or it's just not there. Or you go into the store and it just pinwheels for a while.
Yeah.
So I hope those go away.
Maybe the system performance has been updated.
I'll give this update a 6.0 out of 10 or 100, really, depending how you're scoring it.
Okay, oh, no, that's very different scores.
Very different scores, yeah.
Obviously.
One of those would be like a restaurant that gets shut down.
I give it this a 600 out of 1,000.
Even the 60 out of 100 would be the restaurant that gets shut down. This would be a restaurant that gets incinerated.
May contain some rat.
it's just a giant rat swarm.
6 out of 100 is just like a dude coughing into a pot going, you hungry?
It's Lenny eating a can of beans saying, please don't tell anyone how I live.
This is an abandoned lot. There's not even a building here.
Welcome to Uncle Funky's Floor Beans. The number one restaurant in Soho.
So anyway, I'm excited for the update. 6.01
will be fascinating.
We've been talking about this update for this long.
We'll look at the text again. Barrett, if you could bring up the text back on. Look how much there is to.
We've gotten through all the bullet point.
I'm holding out for update 6.9 if you guys are knowing what I am talking about.
Nice. Okay, that was a lot of switching. I didn't like that. We'll see what happens. Obviously, TGS will be going on. Maybe Sony can do something there. We still don't know what is going to go on with if they're going to do PSX this year of any kind, so that may be a good time to be like, surprise, name changes. But we'll actually find out. We don't have to wait too long, though, because if you want to play something fun, you don't have to worry about updates. Shadow of the Tomb Raider is out.
Oh, yeah.
It is indeed.
Yeah, that game is out a week after Spider-Man. Yeah, I think we've all played it here, right?
Yeah. Have you guys finished it?
Yes.
I've not finished it yet.
Yeah. So we won't,
we'll avoid spoilers. It came out.
Well, we were going to ruin it for everybody.
Yeah, that was the plan.
The Spider-Man cameo is.
I can't believe she turns into a huge bird at the end and flies away.
Yeah. She becomes the tomb.
No, I mean, this game. First of all, I know a lot of people are sort of skeptical about it because it's developed by Eidos Montreal instead of Crystal Dynamics. I think the worst thing about this game, hands down, is that it comes out between Spider-Man and Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
And that we've already played Rise of the Tomb Raider. This is very much an iterative sequel to a fantastic game, but I think that there's that sort of thing you get with any time a second entry in a series is completely just blows you out of the water, incredible, that either the sequel to that, the sort of the threequel, has to completely reinvent the formula and do everything new and exciting and different, or it suffers from playing it kind of too safe. And I wouldn't say this plays it too safe, but it is definitely familiar if you play the last one.
Yeah, I said on Up at Noon the other day, this feels like a TV show that's confidently in its third season. And I don't know if it needs to be reinvented or if we'll get a fourth season or if this is the end of the show. But like, this is a fun as hell, gorgeous, rock solid, really, really well made video game.
It's a good ass video.
Yeah. And it doesn't reinvent the wheel or like really overthrow the franchise. I mean, a couple of years ago, this was a franchise that needed help. And then it got rebooted and it was stunning. And then they made a sequel to it, which opened up things even more. And this is sort of like a natural progression or iteration of that. But it doesn't really change anything, but I think that's okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm into it. It's one of those things where like if you like the franchise or if you love like Uncharted, for example, and you need something to fill that void, this will absolutely do it, and it's a damn fine time while you're doing it.
The tombs are so fun.
They're so good, and the crypts too.
Yeah,
not just tombs.
Yeah,
but it's like they're it's tried and true formula. It's proved that it's not just Crystal Dynamics who is capable of really knocking it out of the park, and it's also it does some interesting things from a character standpoint too. Like I have some beef with some things in the story, but there's a couple of different notions with Laura, like the idea of her having to be the one who always has to save the day, and like her sort of coming to terms with maybe that's not so much the case.
Right,
I think that's super interesting.
Yeah, there's a like sort of a sentiment going around that she's like become too sort of miserable or engrossed in like the dire weight of all of this tomb raiding.
Yeah.
But there are moments in this game where she's really happy or excited to be doing what she's doing.
Yeah.
There's joy. There's childlike wonder.
She pets a llama?
Yeah.
Alpaca or whatever.
There's a lot of good stuff going on here. And I think like we, obviously you brought up Uncharted. We compared these franchises a lot. And one of the reasons I really appreciate the Tomb Raider series is that there's the way that world unfolds and how it allows backtracking, how it allows sort of ownership of weaponry and customization, costumes, like going into tombs and finding collectibles, like building up currency, going to shops and buying things. These are a lot of things that the Uncharted games just sort of like brush aside in their quest to be this like kind of, roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
Which, again, one is not better than the other in terms of the way it excels there. But I do appreciate how Tomb Raider just goes like, no, this is a video game, and you can go back after things collapse and after tombs crumble, and you can explore jungles, and you can hunt, and you can poach, and you can skin things, and you can turn them into guns.
It's Metroid-y, which is always the best thing to see in a game, where it's like if they give you active reasons to keep going back to areas you've already been, even after the main story is finished. Like, and that's hard to do in a game that isn't this big, huge, sprawling open world.
Yeah,
I mean, one thing that this game does suffer with, which is not a slight against the game itself, but really more just kind of the position it's in, where in the first game, you're like, you're on an island, and you don't have anything, and you're like, you unlock the stick, and you're like, yes, I have sharp stick. And then in the second one, you've got like climbing gear and you've got guns and you're upgrading your guns and you've got this entire skill tree filled out. And you're like, once you've done all that, it kind of puts Lara in a weird spot where you're like, how do you do that again? And they, I mean, they start the game off with like another, you know, another spot in the woods where you're like, I need to get my stuff together. But at the same time, you've already gotten some of her gear. So there's less of like a thrill. There's less pageantry when you unlock new stuff that you've already seen before.
Well, there's that Samus Aran thing where like they take your stuff away and then they find a way to give it back to you better, you know, and you have to reclaim it. Like almost every Metroid game or a bunch of the prominent ones start with you being super powered. Like you look at Prime and then all of a sudden they knock you down a peg, you lose everything, and then you have to slowly rebuild it all. And this game has like elements of that. But there are, even in my playthrough, there was a bunch of stuff where I'm like, I remember how I got into a door like that in the last game. But I finished the game without the ability to do that here. Mm-hmm. But I know if I go poke around to the earlier sections and fast travel from campfire to campfire, I can like tear down walls and open doors and hunt. And like there's a trap on the floor. But I think if I jump from somewhere high, I can trigger a way to like pound through it and unlock stuff inside it.
You see that thing like in the very, very beginning of your playthrough is like the second area.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I know what that is and I can't open that yet, but God damn it,
Oh, that bugged me the whole time.
Right? Right? Yeah, totally.
Like, I know I don't want to go back to that jungle. Yeah.
And the setting lends itself to that really well in terms of being a jungle place because it's kind of like, it's dense and it provokes you to kind of poke around the corners and go like, what's behind that brush? And like, can I walk over there and can I not? And then in other ways, it sort of force fields that a little bit because things collapse behind you, around you all the time. You're constantly setting motion these narrative events that like destroy a giant pathway between two regions. And then you're like, well, how do I get back through that? And the answer is you fast travel, which doesn't make sense. I guess it means somebody picked you up in a helicopter and airdropped you back in there.
Yeah.
But you gotta, you know.
Even though the one helicopter crashed.
Yeah.
I feel like the sort of the layout of the last game of Rise of the Tomb Raider was very much like a huge kind of wide valley that had some mountains and caves and stuff on the edge of it. And like, this is completely just my memory. I could be off here. And this one feels more like it's kind of a more narrow winding valley that's like a bunch of smaller areas stitched together.
Yeah.
Like there, it's more of like, it's definitely not linear, but it's more linear. Like it's more of a bunch of smaller areas kind of like stacked on top of each other.
It reminds me a lot more of the first Tomb Raider, Tomb Raider 2013.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To the point that backtracking is sort of kind of tricky. Like it's not, it's the same issue I had with God of War. Cause once if you've burned through the story, if you've gone along the kind of main path, it is like a little bit of like, you're like, well, there's sights you were meant to see in a certain order. Like there's stuff that's kind of, it doesn't necessarily guide your eye, but if you're taking your time and looking around on your way through it, it's a lot easier to find things you're supposed to go poke around in.
Right.
And you burn through it really fast, and then you're like, I think I might have seen something back there, and then you fast travel through campfires to go exploring.
Now, obviously something that this game is doing that's definitely evocative of the previous ones in the trilogy is that it's releasing at a completely inopportune time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just want to implore people who love great video games who are probably just rounding down on Spider-Man and maybe they want something else. Maybe you got, you know, maybe there's a place you can rent it or borrow it or something. Play this game. Get to this game. Even if you just put it on your, you know, on the back burner and you come back to it, find time for it because I think it's really special. I think it does a lot of really amazing stuff. It looks just gorgeous on PlayStation on the Pro.
It's a really
beautiful game.
I mean, they've spent a lot of time, I think, just like really upping the ante with graphics. I can play this one on a Pro, and it's got photo mode, which you can go into. There's a really weird thing where you can make Lara smiling in the midst of horrible scenarios.
Yeah.
Just like covered in skulls.
She's like, hey, everybody, spring break, fighting these eels.
One more thing I wanted to touch on, which we talked about with Rich Briggs on Up at Noon, who is sort of,
he's the brand director.
Yeah, he's sort of the brand director of the franchise. And we talked about how one of the things they nail really well in this game is the phobias. And like the kind of horror of fear of drowning and fear of enclosed spaces. And and it's the kind of thing that I didn't really know I had, like, sort of deep fears about being in this like collapsing tunnel underwater and rocks are coming down. Lara is pulling herself through sections of this and just like the corners are fading in on her and she's losing breath and there's a piranha and you're like, get me out of here. And then you crawl out and you're like,
When she comes up for air in this game, man.
It's such a... I could not get through those underwater scenes fast enough. Yeah. Like, death by drowning is one of my greatest fears. Mm-hmm. I like almost drowned as a kid, and so I'd be in there. I'm like, no, get me out of here. And then an eel would stop you, and it's like, no, no, die, die. I can't do this. I can't do this.
Dying in a cave underwater, and then there's an eel there is like, that's like a just a big old peanut butter hot fudge sundae of like nightmare shit that I don't want to deal with.
And then you get out, and then like there's a voice in your head being like, you left a lot of treasure down there. Better go back and get it. And you're like, oh, like,
there
God.
Was a vein of gold. You got to go back for it if you want to buy that upgrade.
There's that scene in Temple of Doom where they reach in, where the woman reaches in to free them from that, like, you know, that spike pit area. Yeah, it's just to put her hand into that, like, that bug hole.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't put your hand in there.
Don't put your hand in the bug hole. But there's a lot of, like, moments like that in this game, not with the bug hole. I wish they had done something like that. But that make you really feel just kind of...
Yeah, like, it gets really into the sort of visceral... It is. It's that notion of like reconciling the horror of this franchise since the reboot, where it's like, I mean, there's literally a part in it, not to get too into spoiler territory, where you're literally just crawling through corpses, both fresh and old as hell.
Yeah. Which is when I think they did that in was it the first or second game of the trilogy?
Blood caves.
You're just digging. Just rummaging through that blood tunnel.
So
the thing is, in that one, like that was literally just like red goo.
Yeah.
And some skeleton parts. Over this one is like a bunch of fresh parts of people, and like like a bunch of times it's just the same dead bodies.
And Laura's like dry
and
heaving. She's like, oh, it smells awful.
But it is. It's like, because like as the camera gets tighter and tighter around you on that, like it's like a dog's face being forced into its own pee. You're just like, oh, I don't like this. Awful. I don't like this. In a good way.
I think all of that adds that sort of that layer of that survival element. You're always hearing, like, she's a survivor and this is about survival. And you're like, well, what does that really mean? And then you get into like the kind of moment to moment nitty gritty of stuff like that in this game. And you're like, oh, that's what it means. It means like putting yourself through these disgusting, gross, visceral situations, and then trying
and
not to dry
heat.
They also do something really, really nice in this, because obviously it's a game that, you know, it has a bunch of different bells and whistles to attract different people. It's got shooting, it's got climbing, it's got stealth, it's got puzzles. You can customize the difficulty of the puzzles and the difficulty of the combat separately.
I loved that.
Which is such a wonderfully respectful and like just a, like, I find the puzzles like actually challenging in a way that's not tedious. Mm-hmm. The combat, I'm like, I don't play this to shoot dudes. Like, I'll put the combat down to easy, and I'll put the puzzles up to hard or normal or whatever. And it's like, even the climbing, it's like
you can adjust the platform,
which I think honestly, like, is probably the most impressive part of that to me, just from a design perspective. Usually, like, you know, Uncharted, for example, you can climb the white marked rocks,
or yellow, you can climb it.
Just the texture, though, like there's nothing dynamic about that. But now in Tomb Raider, like there's so much stuff that you can climb on, not necessarily that you have to. But that means that they had to render those 3-4 times with overlays. That's amazing to me.
You can do that overhead climb now.
Yeah.
And you can sort of grab your rope and drop down 10 feet and swing. Like, there's a lot more maneuverability there. There's also the fact that, like, a lot of the level design is sort of labyrinthian, and you are in an area and you're like, I don't know if I'm on the main path or if I'm heading to a side tomb. And then you realize you're going to a side tomb and you're like, yeah, but it's so cool down here. I just want to like finish this off.
And you know there'll be a clever way that they'll bring you back.
Totally.
Because it's a weird, like, I think it might just because I do the guides here and so like my brain just works brokenly. But to me, like, I always, when I'm going into like a challenge tomb, I'm like, now where's the exit path? Just because I'm curious, because I think it's so neat how it's like, oh, I'm going to finish this tomb. It's going to collapse around me. How am I going to get out?
And she'll tell you that too. Like, you'll make a left and she's like, I believe that's the way out of here. And then you'll go back and you'll finish the tomb. One of the things I think that like kind of holds this game back is I wasn't wild about the skill tree. I feel like a lot of it was kind of granular or didn't really unlock anything that I found a ton of use for.
That's what happens with skill trees is once you've unlocked them like twice, you're kind of like, when do I get the ones that I like?
I think that's the real issue on mine for this one. It's just like a lot of it's just a means to an end.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same thing with Batman, with Far Cry. Like, it's this thing where the first time around, it's a huge thrill. You don't know what's back there. And then the second time around, you're like, maybe there's some new stuff that sticks out. But the third time around, you're like, where's that thing I used to do all the time? I don't have that. What do you mean I have to do a side quest to unlock that?
Right. Yeah, and
that used to be just 2 points.
Well, that's a good point there too, because there are segments on the skill tree that are very specifically blacked out that you can't unlock unless you do side stuff.
Right.
And if your jam is to just kind of cruise through the main campaign, you're going to miss some of the cooler things up there, which are, again, kind of tied to the more Metroidvania-y, open up doors with a rope kind of thing. and so I was a little bummed out because I...
I enjoyed the combat in this game, but for the most part, I was pretty run and gun with stuff. Like, I didn't really feel a huge nudge to stealth kill that often, because like you get some pretty cool weapons pretty far into the game, and you just kind of run out there. But a lot of the skill tree stuff is tethered to combat, and if you're like if it's like a, you know, stringing together five stealth kills, if that's not the way you play, then there's like a whole section on that skill tree that you can kind of just skip over. Mm-hmm. And so it's really difficult, and I don't know how many games can really nail that balance of like rewarding you and nudging you to play in different ways, but I wish this game had felt a little bit better in that department.
Yeah. I mean, it is also, there's a new game plus, and there's also like 7 months of DLC or something planned.
Their DLC is insane.
If anybody didn't play Rise of the Tomb Raider, I would say jump on this for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of the I don't know if it's the best one in the series entirely, but because I've played all of them, but I like the setting the most, and
me
I think
too.
It's easily the most gorgeous, and it's it's a really solid game.
So. And if you did play those games, this game rewards you pretty much right off the bat by giving you a bunch of cool costumes you can unlock.
Yeah,
like the low poly Lara models.
Yeah, that's a really fun one.
Still no big head mode.
Bums me out that you can't always use those though.
No, yeah,
it
does lock
into that where it's like there's a couple of sections where you have to wear specific types of clothing. It's like narratively it makes sense, but it's also just like, come on, it's a video game.
Also because especially one time I unlocked this really cool shoulder wing. It was basically just like a feathered shoulder pad.
Oh, I found that one. That's great.
I wore that for a long time.
That in every cut scene makes everything look 10 times cooler.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was weird when it would lock you out. That was my whole thing, was this game. There's a bit of a give and take. Like, every great thing it did, it also did a thing I didn't really love as much. Yeah. But, yeah, like you were saying, there's so much fascinating stuff to explore, and the puzzles are so great, and there's so much to that world.
You're totally right, because it's like it nudges you a lot to sort of play with different costumes, and in this case, craft costume parts as well. But a lot of them have specific traits and perks that make you never want to take them off. And like that bird thing, I wore for like a fourth of maybe a third of the game, and I was just like, I want to wear other costumes, but this one has like some cool stuff going for it. So, and I appreciate, like, if you look at, you know, we talked about Spider-Man earlier in the show, you could unlock cosmetic costumes in that game and then apply the traits from other costumes to them and sort of, you know, mix and match. And so I wish they go in that direction.
One costume that was noticeably absent, and if anyone from Eidos Montreal is listening, please, really, this needs to be in the game. A Legends of the Hidden Temple Blue Barracuda costume. Yep. Doesn't have to be officially licensed Nickelodeon game show gear, but I think that like a little skateboard helmet and like a goofy t-shirt and some knee pads would
go purple parrot, but good.
I think we'll see the franchise, if it continues sort of in this mold, I think we'll see it evolve into some of the wackier stuff from the Tomb Raiders, Tomb Raiders past, that we'll see injected into
That's kind of the thing with, like, I'm the most excited about, like, I'm excited to finish this game because I'm curious to see where the story takes us. But like, I'm also really excited to see what the franchise looks like after this. Cause it feels like, you know, we were talking about how like this is, it's sort of finalizing that transition of her being that survivor who like has made it through that really horrible part of her life and is now, and then like Tomb Raider 4 or whatever they call it, now we can get into like, oh, I'm going to dual wield pistols and kill velociraptors.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, I mean, they've dabbled in the supernatural in this trilogy and sometimes just flat out thrown you into it. But I would love to see this go, I don't know, maybe still stay visceral and bloody, but throw in a T-Rex.
I think they can lean into some of the craziness.
Give me like 50-year-old Lara Croft in the year like 2074 or whatever, and she's fighting Tyrannosauruses in the Savage Land.
Sure. Like into weird sci-fi Logan.
Yes.
If we want to talk about other mashups and crazy time jumps and all those wild things, not the software system update, Barrett. No, not that. We're going to move on to a very quick segment that I would... not the update, Barrett. It's not the update again. Don't do that to me. I am going to quickly talk about the new Kingdom Hearts 3 Big Hero 6 trailer and the art. I'm going to put myself on the clock. I will give... Max, would you mind? I will give myself a minute to discuss this, because I know everyone else on the panel probably is okay with only staying to a minute. Barrett, if you could go to unnumbered camera, please.
I just think it's a fun challenge for you.
Just to see if I can fit this all in? Yeah, we're going to see how it goes.
I go on before you start.
Three, two.
Listen, guys, that trailer was amazing. So much happened in that trailer. I did not expect them to reveal so many other characters coming back that we didn't think about. Like the fact that we saw what is probably Replicu, if you want to say Replica Riku. That was pretty crazy. Also, just this Big Hero 6 world, it's playing on the video version. It looks gorgeous. It looks just like the actual movie. I can't wait to actually explore San Francisco, go through the rooftops, basically explore a cool San Francisco in the future. That looks so rad. But the big stuff that's going on is the returning characters. We see them on the box art. We see them in the full trailer at the end when they shift into the story stuff. And it feels like this is, truly is the culmination of all of the games coming together at once that we really want and that they've said that's what it is. I don't know how that's going to be for people just jumping into this game, but as a longtime fan of the series, it's so amazing to see all these characters together at once, kind of reckoning with each other and all of the shit that they have gone through together in dealing with Mickey Mouse and a bunch of Disney characters, but also about true friendship and stuff. And it's pretty...
And that's about all the time we have. Kingdom Hearts here on Podcast Beyond.
I'll take that.
Hey, great job, buddy. Yeah,
that was only 60 seconds.
All right.
Right, I know, right? Yeah. It's a long minute.
Wow.
Time flies when you're Kingdom Hearts.
Kingdom Hearts 3 comes out on PlayStation 4 January 29th, 2019. If you're looking for something else to play, Max, quickly, I just wanted to hear from you about Divinity Original Sin 2.
Oh, yeah.
No.
So, have you played this at all?
I have not. So, please go
this
ahead.
I got thrown at I think it was like a sponsored live stream with Damon Hatfield. It is a big old RPG. It is real-time exploration and then turn-based combat. And it's very, very like hard, grindy D&D-ish stuff. But what I love about it is that it's the kind of game where you can just operative words being you can do blank. It does all sorts of weird stuff you wouldn't think about. Like if somebody is standing in blood, the game is like, yes, blood is a liquid, therefore blood can be electrified. So you can like...
I mean, that's just logic. That's science.
Yeah.
And what part of that wouldn't be natural to you?
It's just, it's the kind of game that just, you really... I'm so used to games where it has a story it wants to tell me, and this game definitely has a story, but it also has a lot of it's a proper ass role playing game where I kept feeling like I was breaking rules messing around with it. But yeah, I sunk probably 10 hours into it this weekend. Like I was kind of in a funk, and I was like, I don't want to be on Earth. I want to be in a magical realm, and I just got completely like sucked into it. And I don't know anyone who's really into it. You can do local split screen co-op, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah, I've played a couple hours of it in co-op split screen, and it's really fun. We're at this point right now where it's like, I don't know if I love it just because it's so overwhelming at first of how many things you can do, and I'm like, I don't know where to go if what I'm doing is correct or how I'm making my characters right, but like, I know I can take it at a steady enough pace where I can just try things out, see if maybe this is the type of character I want, maybe these are the storylines I want to see. There's a lot. It is D&D the game.
Is this like one of those desert island games where like, if you're into it, you will spend a long time here?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, I think you can spend a lot of time here. Yeah.
No, I don't know, like, to get a sense of sort of how deep it is, like, the obviously trophy system is never great for that. I think I was several hours in, and I looked at, like, just my home screen, and it was, like, 1% of the trophies, and I was like,
oh no!
What are you talking about?
It's gonna be all, yeah.
What are you? I'm like, I'm not going to platinum this, but it's definitely, like, a game, you know, like The Witcher, except if you could play as, you know, 8 existing bespoke characters plus any custom character you wanted.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, it's not the kind of game I was expecting to grab me, but it completely sucked me in. And
yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't, I know you well, it doesn't seem like a very Max Scoville game. But
so what sold me is, I think you can romance skeletons. Like, I believe.
Okay, there we are.
See,
now we're in the real house.
Figured it out.
There's that Max I know.
However, I tried to...
Skeleton Max Scoville.
I tried to name my character Boner Jams, but it wouldn't let me because it was like, it does have an online component. You can do like online co-op, and it was like, we're not letting you be
jams.
What about
B0
Boner
and
Daddy?
3R.
I don't know. That seems
you could
too,
find. No,
that
I'm just saying
that
could,
seems like too hacksaurus for this.
You could try harder.
Medieval.
You'll just have to restart the game and find out. But yeah, I've had a lot of fun with it so far.
I'm trying to get my wife to play. She's been like wanting to play D&D. We're just gonna play pen and paper D&D, I think. But as far as like that idea of like a role playing game really capturing the digital version of what it's like to be playing, like, you know, a tabletop game and being like, yeah, I want to attack the door. Do I kick its ass? And you're like, no, you didn't kick the door's ass. This game is like, you got some points in. You want to keep wailing on it? And you're like, hell yeah, I'll kick this door's ass. The skeletons can pick locks with their fingers. Like, there's just stupid stuff like that.
That's so good.
That makes sense.
Here's a question, though. Can I be a skeleton?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
You can be
a skeleton.
But everyone hates you because you're a walking abomination. So you have to get, like...
Perfect.
You have to get, like...
That's every character I've ever played.
Shapeshifter costumes that let you, like, turn into other races.
So skeleton, no good. Skeleton in a hat,
Beautiful. Basically.
Best friend.
Yeah, basically. Super into it. And there's like another skeleton you could be friends with. I'm hanging out with this like velociraptor aristocrat guy, and I'm hanging out with this
I think I'm playing one of those.
Vampire witch. And I'm just a dwarf.
What platforms is this available on? It's now available on PS4 and Xbox One, yeah, the definitive edition.
It's been
delightful.
It's totally
it's been out forever.
It's been on PC for forever, and I've been hearing about it from people who are like, yeah, I did this thing. Like, I tried to romance the skeleton, but I hurt myself. And I'm like, oh, how do I play this game? I finally jumped in there. Like, one of the first things you do is you just find a bucket on the ground, and you're like, this could be a helmet. And you're like, yes, it gives you like perfect minor protection.
Yeah, it's one of those rules. Games.
Yeah,
I love
it's like
it.
Old timey Fallout. I love that.
I love the potential of it a lot, and it's definitely something where I'm still getting my bearings with it, but I'm excited to see where it goes. And like we were saying, it seems like a very deep game.
We should buddy up.
Yeah, definitely. Line,
see
oh,
it
absolutely.
Actually works. Squad up.
We'll find out. Another game coming out soon that looks pretty lengthy and in depth as well. Assassin's Creed Odyssey, October 5th. Sorry, JR, for
no,
the
okay.
guide that's about to come for you.
When you do get your hands on it, come to IGN for our wikis.
Off and then didn't dump like a massive season pass on top of you at the same time. That was
vaguely,
yeah.
So that's what I wanted to talk about. The season pass has been announced and everything in it is coming out. It has basically these three main sections to it. The first is Legacy of the First Blade, which will introduce players to the first hero to wield the iconic hidden blade. That will be released in December 2018. The next bit of it, and these are both sort of episodic releases, so there are multiple parts to each of these big releases. The second part is The Fate of Atlantis, which will have players confront godly creatures.
Into it.
And uncover the secrets of the legendary
awesome.
Sunken
City. Yeah. I'm sorry, elephant in the room here. Indiana Jones, The Fate of Atlantis is a classic point-and-click adventure game. It seems kind of ballsy for Ubisoft to just kind of be like, oh yeah, we're Fate of Atlantis. You could have any other word instead of Fate of Atlantis.
The Destiny of Atlantis.
Yeah, so I want to play that now to see if there's like Orichalcum. And like,
while we're here, maybe you've heard of a little game released last year called Super Mario Odyssey. So maybe get your...
I would be amazed if there wasn't an Indiana Jones, at least a couple of Easter eggs hidden throughout there.
I don't think that'll work. It's an old ship rib.
I was so mad. I found my folks are moving back home to a new place, and my mom is cleaning out all my old shit, and she found a copy of Indiana Jones and the Infernal Machine.
Oh, man.
And that game is so bad good.
Yeah.
It's wonderful and horrible, but really delightful.
If you ever wanted to play like Tomb Raider 2 as a dude swimming through Vaseline?
Yeah. Oh, God,
really
I don't need
it.
That image. The third and final piece of the DLC season pass, which you will also be able to purchase individually, is Assassin's Creed 3 Remastered, the third entry in the series. Not really, but sort of.
So I'm actually really excited for that. Because
okay, tell me
Well, so I never played Assassin's Creed 3.
Well,
well, that's kind of the thing where it's like everyone I was going to, I was working on other projects when it came out. I just didn't have the time for it then, and by the time that I did have the time for it, everyone was just crapping all over it, and they were like, don't play it, don't play it, don't play it. So I was like, all right, I guess I won't play it. And so like, I'm glad to see, like, first off, I'm super excited for Odyssey in general. Like, I've already played throughout the course of doing a bunch of previews for IGN on it. Like, I've probably already played about 10 to 12 hours of it, and like, usually when you play that much of a game in previews, like, you're burnt out, you don't want to play it when it first launches. Like, I legitimately can't wait to get my hands on it.
Right.
But then three, like... Because it's, you know, I know it's just a remastering, but I like, there's a bit in the press release about it saying essentially, like, quality of life improvements or
improved
something like that.
Game mechanics or things like that.
And so, like, a lot of the problems, you know, some people will complain about Connor as a character, which, like, sure, you can't go back and re-record all that VO or whatever, but, like, when it comes to the biggest complaints that I've heard about 3, it was always the mechanics were janky, things were busted, they didn't work well.
Yeah.
And so if those have been addressed, then I'm super into it, especially because apparently you can go to my hometown in this, which is, like, super neat.
What's your hometown?
Martha's Vineyard. They made Jaws there.
Nice. I know what Martha's Vineyard is.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, no, I reviewed this game back when I was at Rev 3 Games, and I did the whole, like, kind of preview lead-up coverage stuff, and it was always like, I think this is going to come together well, and it's like, there's a lot of really cool stuff in the game, but
absolutely.
It's definitely got, like, it's got some major issues, and it's cool if they're going in and tweaking them.
Yeah.
I think the most sort of defining thing about this, or sort of my issues with that game, is that about 7 hours in, you get this thing that says, it's like part 9, the story begins. And you're like, what is beginning? We're like this far in. You know?
Don't like that.
No, and it definitely, like, my issue with Assassin's Creed, it's gotten so much better about that as a series, is that it seems to just completely fundamentally misunderstand the idea of an open world, where there's so many of the missions are like, please stay with the tour guide. Don't go off the beaten path. Don't desert your class group. Stay with us. We have plans for you. And, you know, like autofill stealth missions and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons that I'm super excited about Odyssey is like they did this, I think, when I don't remember if it was a core feature to begin with or if it was an update that came later for Origins. But there's this thing called exploration mode. And it's like instead of in, you know, Unity or Syndicate or whatever the one right before that was, I forget. It would just be like, okay, you talk to a guy and you get a quest, and now there is just a marker on your map and a path right to it. Now it's like, I'm going to take a quest, and then you get clues as to where it sort of is in the general vicinity of. It's like that thing in The Witcher where if you turn off your mini-map, and they'll be like, hey, so yeah, you want to go kill this monster? I saw it in this cave behind the mountain next to the bridge over this particular river. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. I guess I have to go find that now instead of just being like, that's cool. Where I'm going. Yeah.
No, that's the thing is like, obviously games like Assassin's Creed, they're massive and they're huge and their big ships are hard to steer. So to crap on Assassin's Creed 3 in 2018 is you know, kind of a low blow. It's got cool stuff in there, but I'm super stoked at seeing little tweaks to stuff that made Odyssey work really well. Like in Origins, having that Breath of the Wild-esque way of just going out of the world and seeing it.
Yeah, I cannot wait to sail around Greece in a big funky boat.
Well, you should. I guess we have your answer then for the next question. We're going to jump right into questions. From the Facebook Beyond group, which is facebook.com/groups/podcastbeyond. You can join that lovely group of people and also ask your questions each week. Jacob Vauder asks, what October release besides Red Dead are you most excited for? I assume it's Odyssey for you.
Crayola Scoot.
Yeah. Hey, you stole my answer. I want to play Creole.
Number one game of the fall.
It's actually Mobile Casino 7.
Ooh, we got to run.
No, it's 100% Odyssey for me. When that game drops, I'm just going to be wearing an old-timey Spartan helmet and kicking people off of rocks.
Perfect.
Also, that is, from what I've discovered in the previews, the best way to play that game. Just the most efficient for leveling up.
Just kicking, kicks tip right there. A lot of cliffs.
Yep.
People are suckers.
Fist of the North Star. I really want to jump in that. It's basically cel-shaded Yakuza 0 with the nonsense Mad Max post-apocalyptic anime stuff going on.
You just said a bunch of words I like.
Yeah, it's good stuff. If you're Brian, you were saying you're totally scared off by the merging Yakuza timelines and there being a new game every 2 months, so you never know where to jump on.
Yep.
I feel like Fist of the North Star is a pretty good ludicrous way of, you know, getting in on that. So, yeah.
And for me, Starlink Battle for Atlas, I'm sort of waiting patiently for, cautiously optimistic. It just seems so different from a lot of the other Ubisoft games right now that I'm curious what they're doing with it.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'd love
Star Fox.
Star Fox on the Switch definitely won't hurt. One final question, since we're running short on time. Jacob Meyer, another Jacob, asks, with Greg Miller, kind of funny finding his way into Spider-Man, as you may have seen him in a cameo in that game.
No.
Yeah, we'll leave it as a spoiler if you haven't seen the 1,000 photos of it on Twitter. What game series would you like your likeness to appear in? Of course, multiple people commented and said Kingdom Hearts for me.
Yeah.
Which, given, but yeah, what about you guys?
I'm already the default character in PUBG.
And most RPGs to come out and feature sci-fi men in 2012 to 2014.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Anytime there was a bald space marine with a 5 o'clock
shadow. Yep.
There we go.
There it is.
I'd love to show up in Yakuza as like
you basically do.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, like as like some crappy NPC.
Or if they make an Ace Ventura pet detective,
I want to buy Gundam models.
That'd be good. I kind of just want to be like a random soldier in a Metal Gear game. Like, I think that'd be great, like Metal Gear Solid 5, like one of the dudes just like out in the world having a conversation, then I get a balloon attached to my ass and shot up into the sky. Like when you go back to base, I'm like flipping pancakes in the kitchen or something. I think that'd be great. Or like a zombie in Resident Evil. Just like something simple, but just like, there it is.
Well, like a balloon attaching to your ass and lifting you off into the sky and disappearing, so too has this episode of Beyond disappeared. This has been Beyond episode 559. My name is Jonathan Dornbush. I've been your host this week. You can find me on Twitter at JM Dornbush. Brian, where can people find you?
At Agent Bizzle.
Max.
Max Scoville.
And JR.
I'm at US of JR.
And of course, you can join those lovely people in the Facebook group, Beyond, at facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond. Remember, Beyond is live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on beyond.ign.com. And thank you so much for watching. Beyond.
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 Gotta run.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode, so search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.